Technology, including AI, needs protection. Intellectual property of corporations needs protected from espionage. Military technology needs protection from foreign agents. That's the topic today on Mind Matters.
Welcome to Mind Matters, where artificial and natural intelligence meet head on. Here's your host, Robert J. Marks.
Greetings. Technology is vital in commerce and war. Corporations spend billions in development, and they don't want to get ripped off. Technology and AI, more than ever, determine military superiority. What are the laws that protect technology, and how are they enforced? That's what we're going to talk about today, and we have a special guest that specializes in this. Daniel M. Ogden, J.D., is the Director of Export Compliance and is the University Export Control Officer at Baylor University. He is the Directorate of Defense Trade Controls Empowered Official. Daniel is an attorney at law, licensed custom broker, and international trade consultant who for more than 25 years has counseled and represented companies on various aspects of international trade and business. He served as the chair of the National District Export Council and also as the chair of the National District Export Council Trade Policy Committee. He was appointed to the North Texas District Export Council in 2008 by the U.S. Secretary of Commerce. In this capacity, he serves as the chair of both the Compliance and Security Committee and the Export University Committee. I should mention that Mr. Ogden is not speaking today on behalf of Baylor University, and that his comments and the views expressed are strictly his own. Dan, welcome. Thank you for spending time with us today.
No, thank you.
You know, I know that talking to you, that you are one that really is interested in the implications of technology and war. And I agree with you that technology wins wars. You're an amateur buff in the use of the technology in the military. Give us a quick overview.
Well, this is a very interesting topic and one that I'm a student of military history. And what you will see in terms of technology, kind of just as an overview, and I'll provide some specific examples, is that technology in terms of military use does not, technological development, I should say, does not occur in a vacuum. It really occurs because of the needs. And what happens is, throughout history, the nature of warfare tends to shift between offensive measures and defensive measures. And so you'll have a particular offensive measures that are used, and so technological development will increase the defense, and I'll switch back and forth. Let me give you some examples. Without going too far back, siege warfare, of course, has been used for centuries. And when the Chinese invented
siege warfare, that's when somebody comes in and surrounds a city.
You have a castle and you have some type of stronghold defense, a stronghouse, so to speak, in which you defend whatever you're defending. And the traditional way was to starve these individuals out, et cetera. If you saw the movie Lord of the Rings, you had very interesting ways in which they conducted siege warfare there. But the real big development really began in technological development was the Chinese invention of gunpowder, because that enabled artillery. And for the first time, you had a weapon that could actually be effective at some distance in conducting siege warfare. You know, previously you had catapults and things of that nature, but they were hard to use. They weren't very accurate. Now, of course, early artillery in the 15th century, for example, that used by Henry V in the Battle of Agincourt, was not very accurate either. But as time went on, artillery increased in its accuracy. And so that gave the balance to the offense, although artillery also began to use in defensive measures. You really went on the offensive. For example, Napoleon was an artillery officer, and his very skilled use of artillery really is what led to his ability to engage in the victories on the battle he engaged in. So the next big development was the use of rifled guns and automatic weapons. Rifled guns enabled a greater distance for projectile, more accurate. And then, of course, automatic weapons, beginning with, you know, automatic pistols as well as rifles themselves, but particularly the gap in the gun and the machine gun, that totally changed the balance of power over to the defense. And this is why the Civil War had such horrific casualties that had never been seen in warfare before, because the power of the defense. And of course, it was even worse in World War One, because
they were fighting using old strategy.
They were using they were using Napoleonic tactics on the battlefield. And once you had the defense through automatic weapons, through rifle guns, and of course better artillery, it became a slaughter. And then World War One was the total apex of this, because by that time the machine gun, which was only in its very infancy in the Civil War, really became such a potent weapon. So what had to happen is you had so military planners said, we need to use technology to develop a counterweapon. And this actually began World War One with the development of the tank and the use of aircraft, but it reached its apex in World War II. And when particularly the Germans, through their use of armored warfare, which, by the way, they got their ideas from a couple of British military historians named J.F.C. Fuller and Little Hart, the whole theory of armored warfare and blitzkrieg, and the Germans became experts at that, the use of the tank and the aircraft to put the balance back to the offensive. Of course, at the end of the war, and this is quite often what happens, is technology.
This is the end of World War One, you mean?
At the end of World War II,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, what often happens is when the war is being fought, then you're looking to develop technology then to counter the enemy. And of course, at the end of World War II, the big technology was atomic weapons.
Yes.
And then the development of atomic and nuclear weapons really changed the game, because all of a sudden now you had a strategic force in which you could inflict devastation on an enemy, and particularly when we developed missile technology and ICBMs and multiple entry MIRVs, they're called. That enabled you to be able to strike at the enemy from halfway around the world. And that, of course, led to what was called the Doctrine of Mutual Assured Destruction, MAD. And so that led to a stalemate. And then, of course, we have the development by President Reagan of SDI, which, again, attempting to provide.
I had an SDI grant, by the
yes.
way. I'm that old.
And the SDI, of course, was developed as a defensive measure. So what we see then in summary.
SDI, we should say, means Strategic Defense Initiative.
Yeah, missile defense, being able to shoot weapons out at current stages. And this is still ongoing. You know, during the first Gulf War, we had the Patriot missile and all that. And then, so what we see then throughout military history in relation to technology is you have one side, the offensive gains superiority, and then that leads to technological development, switch to the defense. And, mm-hmm. but the point is that necessity, as we all know, is the mother of invention. And necessity is really what drives technological development in terms of military use.
You know, I followed the technology development in World War II, and eventually I want to get to today and AI and its use in warfare and what we can do there. But in World War II, I'm an engineer, and I celebrate how engineers helped win World War II. There was something called the Borden gun sight?
Yes, that's correct.
That was
used for bombing. It was critical because enabled in World War I, when they dropped bombs, they were guessing.
Yes.
The Norton gun sight enabled a precision dropping of ordnance.
But
that
what it
increased
did,
accuracy.
It is so cool. It actually used a computer, an analog computer, that you gave it the sight where you wanted to drop the bomb. The computer actually took over the control of the aircraft and released the bomb.
I did not realize that.
Yeah, so it was really, really advanced stuff. And I read in the book Unbroken, which is the story about
great book.
Yeah, it is a great book. The gentleman that spent all that time at sea and was a prisoner in Japan and ultimately came to Christ with the Billy Graham crusade. I think that the second movie is out about that. But he was on an airplane, and he said that the Norton gun sight was such that if he was shot down, they were instructed to destroy it so that enemy hands wouldn't get on it.
Exactly. It was revolutionary. Of course, the British radar also was critical to the Britain winning the Battle of Britain against the Luftwaffe.
Absolutely. So. And I have a story which I have confirmed that the Germans, the Nazis, were really concerned that we were shooting them, and it wasn't a clear day, that some way we were seeing through the fog. And they actually let it leak that United States or Allied pilots were eating carrots. And they were going to eat these carrots in order to improve their eyesight. And like any good propaganda, it just had that pinch of truth in it that that makes it believable. So that was very interesting. But also, of course, the cracking of Enigma was another one of the engineering accomplishments. Radar, we borrowed, I guess, from the Britons, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. The British basically invented radar.
Yeah.
But again, we see this. Measure, countermeasure.
Yes.
Measure, countermeasure.
Except when we got to the atomic bomb.
Except when we got the atomic bomb, because there wasn't an effective countermeasure for years and years. And, of course, it's still debatable as to how effective missile defense is. But at least it's something. But, yes, with atomic weapons, for decades, the only thing that was the defensive countermeasure was mutual assured destruction. That was it.
And I'm wondering, as we talk a little bit, I wonder if we're going to get to mutually assured destruction with some things in AI. Yeah, in World War II, I had an uncle, my Uncle Junior. That was his name, Uncle Junior. He was trained as a paratrooper that was supposed to drop behind Japan with 24 pounds of explosives on his legs in order to blow up things. And he was so happy when the atomic bomb went up because he was sure that he was going to get killed. But because of what happened, the way that the bomb ended the war, he was able to come back. He settled in West Virginia. He was a Greyhound bus driver and spent a great, flourishing life. So it was really, really amazing. You know, something else I found out. This is something about the U.S. and protected technology. I have this book at home, and it's the covers of the New York Times newspaper. And one of the pages, which actually announces the victory in Japan, there's a little panel in that same page that says United States releases all radar information. So on the victory on Japan Day or thereabout, the United States released all of the radar technology to the world, realizing that it would probably have some great impact on commercial airlines and avoiding other things. I thought that was really interesting. Up to then, you know, that was just top secret, but you didn't need it then. Let's talk about artificial intelligence. Before we started, I just showed you a video called Slaughterbots. We also read headlines, killer AI robot army that could destroy humanity. And there is a movement now to ban fully autonomous weapons, which are generated and controlled by AI that have taken man out of the loop. And there are organizations which are actually started towards doing this, to do this banning. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It's not going to work. Even if you could have some type of international organization where perhaps a treaty where every single country of the world would agree to it. Of course, you have non-state actors such as ISIS and Al-Qaeda, which, you know, obviously are not going to agree to it. But aside from that fact alone, there's really no way to enforce it. You know, we have had some things throughout history that have been banned. For example, during World War I, obviously poison gas was used a lot. Yeah. And countries came together after in the interwar period to ban that. One of the reasons
that was kind of a mutually assured destruction, wasn't it?
It really was, because there's no way to control the wind blowing. And so the poison gas you inflict upon the enemy could just quickly come back upon you. And that's the fact why both sides would have gas masks. And I think that there was such an impractical use of technology that the nation decided it's just not worthwhile doing it. You know, we've had attempts, of course, to prevent nuclear nonproliferation. We see how that goes. And I think the nuclear nonproliferation issue is a good example of this. It's really hard to prevent bad people from doing bad things when they have bad intentions.
Exactly. And I think foundational to the Judeo-Christian ethic is that men and women are fallen. And that there are going to be bad people that develop this technology independent of what the rest of the world says.
And that's right. And so not only is it probably impractical that occur, but also I think it would be foolish for the United States to do that, because in order to retain our technological edge and superiority, we need to be the ones out front developing this. The fact of the matter is it's going to develop. You know, some of the AI stuff, there's a lot of potential for a lot of good anyway. So, you know, it's like anything else. Guns can be used for good things. They can be used for bad things. Fire. I mean, it's one of the four basic elements. that cavemen were using. They can be used for good and for bad. And so the same thing with the AI. It's got, it really has to do with who's using it and for what reason. So I think from a practical measure, for a strategic measure, and also for moral measure, I would be against that.
You know, about the idea of good and evil, there was a recent case of a couple named Jane Austen and Lauren Geoghegan, who wanted to take a bike trip through hostile area in, I don't know how to say this, Tajikistan?
Tajikistan. One of the stands.
One of the stands.
Exactly.
That's right. And they wanted to go through ISIS territory in order to demonstrate the innate, inherent human kindness in the world. And of course, they were killed by ISIS in doing that. So I think that any sort of ban on development of AI would be very, very sad, and I think would have some very bad implications. In fact, I think we could go back to the end of World War II. Imagine a protest in the United States about development of the atomic bomb. And suppose that it took place and we quit developing the atomic bomb because it could kill tens and hundreds of thousands of people. If we had stopped developing the atomic bomb, we would probably be flying swastikas today instead of American flags.
Well, we would have had a million casualties and taken the island of Japan. And
I should say we would be.
And the Japanese would have suffered probably 10 million casualties. So it actually, as horrific as the atomic bomb was, it actually saved lives.
Probably misspoke. Of course, it wasn't time enough in order for the Nazis to win, because the Nazis lost before the atomic bomb.
But nevertheless,
they were working on it.
They were working on it. Fortunately, scientists like Einstein and others fled Germany, came to the United States. So even if Einstein was not directly involved in developing the nuclear weapons, but the fact that he was out of Germany and others like him certainly helped.
Now, in this video, Slaughterbots, that we just watched, there was a swarm of little drones, and these drones actually had the capability of facial recognition, and they also had a shaped explosive inside. And they could actually fly around. They were about the size of a half dollar. And they could fly around and do facial recognition, and they could go up and land themselves on the forehead of their target individual and put off an explosive and kill the person. And, of course, the person that put this out is a Berkeley professor, and he wants to ban the research into all of the autonomous weapons. Now, this weapon that they talked about is horrific, but, you know, if we don't do it, somebody else is going to do it, aren't they?
That is correct. I mean, again, by the United States staying out ahead and leading the way in this, we actually can arguably control, perhaps, the use of it, rather than not doing the research here, letting other countries do it, and then being able to hold us hostage.
And again, I point back to World War II and all of the technology that allowed us to win there. It's just who keeps ahead. You know, as an engineer, when I saw that, I started to think, what are some countermeasures? What are some ways that we can get in the way of these slaughter bots? By the way, the slaughter bots, they're totally fictional. But I actually think that current technology could probably allow them to work. So that's the next question, too. Is this something that could be trumped by additional technology? Or is it going to be an end game where you like the gas in World War I or the atomic bomb, where we actually have a mutually assured destruction sort of compromise that we just have to live with?
And that's if that scenario ever would come about, as horrible as the video showed it to be, that might be one way to prevent its use. The fact that the United States would have that same capability means that actually would be a defensive measure. Because if another country was to launch an attack on the U.S. in that manner, they would risk the same thing happening to themselves. That's correct.
What are some other of the implications of AI in current?
Well, we have, of course, things like smart bombs, cognitive radar, facial recognition, and also one area that I think AI, both in terms of offensive and defensive measures, probably is increasing is the whole area of cybersecurity. And that I do know, I've read reports that the Chinese in particular have developing technologies that would perhaps hamper in a cyber attack some of our high-level missile defenses, things of this nature. So obviously every advanced weapon system we have today is going to depend in some measure upon computer technology, and therefore the ability to protect against cyber attacks is going to be really, really critical. And not only to our infrastructure itself, of course, such as the electrical grid, things of that nature, but also our own military capabilities.
One of the classic applications of I don't know, you would call it AI, but certainly cybersecurity, was the United States' infection of the Iranian nuclear facility with something called the Stuxnet worm. And it infiltrated the nuclear facility and just kind of screwed up their, I guess it was a centrifuge. And that was
never been
cool.
Never been admitted by the U.S., but of course everyone knows that we did.
Well, the thing is too, I think that people came out and said, yeah, we did it. I think there were lots of leaks, which was really stupid, because if you have something that effective that is going to be used as a weapon, you should keep that quiet, because as soon as somebody finds out about it, they're going to do counter sort of technology.
And this kind of circles back to the conversation we had in the previous episode about controls on the technology behind AI. And again, this both in terms of national security purposes as well as protection of our technological edge. The United States, again, we have to be in the forefront AI development. There's a lot of great, wonderful, peaceful uses for AI, but we also, fortunately, we do live in a world that's composed of bad people who want to do bad things for bad purposes. And therefore, we do have to also develop military technologies that use AI to defend ourselves.
So there is a website, stopkillerrobots.org, and they're trying to pressure companies such as Amazon, Microsoft, and Oracle to publicly endorse the call to ban fully autonomous weapons and to commit to never develop these weapons. I think this gets back to the soft problem that we had before. If they don't, somebody else is.
Yeah, I don't think that the Chinese technology companies or the Russian technology companies are going to be adopting that policy. So I
agree.
Don't think we should either.
Okay. Well, Dan, thank you very much. I've learned a lot, and it's been fun talking with you. Thank you for being on the broadcast.
You're welcome.
And so that ends this episode. So until next time, be of good cheer.
This has been Mind Matters with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.